The Holchu Goyim Rabim, the Amru Luchuvin Ale El Har Hashem. All the nations will travel, they will go, and they will say, Luchuvin Eskovin Ale, this ascend Lahar El Har Hashem, Vil Beis Eloki Yaakov. Okay, we're going to ascend to the mountain of Hashem, the Har Hashem. Okay, Har, by the way, is Rosh Yitevos, Rosh Hashanah backwards. Rosh Hashanah is coming up very soon. And every time Har is always some of the Darshanim, they like to say that Har, Rosh Hashanah is a big mountain, and backwards it's Rosh Hashanah. Okay, I don't know if that's any truth to that or whatever. V'nale el Har Hashem v'al beis Elokei Yaakov, the house of Elokei Yaakov, v'yareinu midrachav, and he will teach us. And we learned last week a nice discussion. Who is the one that is the teacher? Is the teacher Hashem? Is the teacher Klal Yisrael? Is the teacher the Melech HaMashiach? Is the teacher, I guess those are the choices, the Melech HaMashiach, Klal Yisrael and Hashem, or maybe the Kohanim, the people, there are certain select people, or maybe it's the average person, every single person to a degree is a teacher. When you walk in the street and someone observes you, you are serving as a model, as a source of inspiration for those that are less fortunate. V'nelcha, let us go, b'orchoysav, we discussed the two different expressions. There is the derech, and there is the oirach. Derech is the large road, and the oirach is the narrow road. V'yareinu midrachav, one of the mefarshim we learned, says that the Melech HaMashiach just needs to teach us the klolim, and the pratim, the details we can figure out on our own, like the example I gave you with the Sefer, on the laws of Netilas Yerdayim by your bed. You really need to have a book this thick teaching you all of the laws, how to wash Netilas Yerdayim by your bed. Just once, if you know the klolim, if you know the general rules, automatically you'll know all of the details. And then we concluded, Ki Mitzion Teitzei Sarah, Udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. We went through really pretty much everything. We just did not finish up the very end. One more little Maimon Chazal. At the very, very bottom, page 40, the very, very bottom here, it says, Asara Chalakim Shal Torah Ba'olam. There are 10 portions of Torah given, sent down to this world. Tisha B'Yerushalayim, the Echad B'chol Olam. 9 are found in Yerushalayim, and 1 throughout the rest of the world. Shenemar Ki Mitzioin Teitzei Sairah. Udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. This Avos the Rebbe Nosson, fascinating sefer. Avos the Rebbe Nosson. One day we should learn Avos the Rebbe Nosson. It's the parallel to Pirkei Avos. There's Pirkei Avos, and then there is Avos the Rebbe Nosson, which is it's just to study the difference, the contrast between that always opens up a whole new world when you're able to compare one to the other. When we went to discuss this Lubavitcher fellow, Rabbi Dalfin. Rabbi Dalfin is a real Chabad, a member of Chabad. He's more Chabad than Chabad itself. And he wrote a whole series of books. And what do many of his books do? Not all of them, but many of his books, they compare Gedolei Yisrael. They compare everyone to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. They compare the Satmarov to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Rav Aaron Kotler and Lakewood to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. They compare Rav Chutner to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rav Yashaber to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Okay, so I mean, what are you gaining? There have already been so many books. How many books have there been written about the Lubavitcher Rebbe? How many books have there been written about the Satmar Rav? Not that many, but there's a lot of stuff out there. But when you read his book, it's fascinating because he brings out things that you only can bring out by comparing. You can write about a person forever and ever and write an encyclopedia. But when you compare him in a positive sense to another person, it has the ability to bring out things that you would otherwise never even imagine. And that's one of the greatest advantages of the Sefer of Avos to Rebbe Nosson, is that it's not just an elaboration or another version of Pirkei Avos. By contrasting what it says there with what it says in Pirkei Avos, it brings out a whole new world that otherwise would be impossible to appreciate. And here, there is a whole series. Okay, this is something which really need to. I'm prepared for this, but there's a whole series of things where in the world that Hashem sent down 10 measures, and 9 were given to one group, and the remainder was given to everyone else.
Yeah, there's a series of those
in Pirkei Avos as well.
And Esther Rabba.
And that's why in Pe'avos Rabbi Nosson there's a different series. And this is something which only appears there. I think in the Pe'avos Rabbi Nosson of Torah, there's not this idea that Hashem sent to this world 10 measures of Torah, and 9 were given to Yerushalayim, and 1 was given to the rest of the world, mysteriously does not appear in Pirkei Avos in its list of 10 things. So that's very telling. That perhaps indicates that Rabbeinu HaKadosh, who compiled Pirkei Avos, disagreed. Held that with Shalika Halacha, is that in Chutz La'aretz, there's just as much Torah as there is in Eretz Yisrael. And part of the proof to that is, look at Talmud Bavli. Talmud Bavli has won the day. There's Talmud Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi. Talmud Bavli is much more expansive than Talmud Yerushalmi. And the facts speak that for the last 1,500 years, what have the Jewish people studied, made their primary limud? The Bavli. Today, the Yerushalmi has a resurgence. There's definitely a bit of a resurgence of the Talmud Yerushalmi today, more than ever was, because of all of the new svarim that they've been putting out. But you see that in Bavel, you see the Torah of Bavel is very, very significant. It's extremely significant. So how could you say that 10 measures of Torah were given to the world and 9 went to Yerushalayim and only 1 went to Chutz Li'aretz? By and large, today we live off what it's the Torah that has been achieved and accomplished, the scholarship of Chutz La'aretz, not Yerushalayim. So it's a very challenging Maamar Chazal. And in fact, it's not in Pirkei Avos. It's not in the major Mishnayos. Instead, it's in Avos de Rabbi Nosson, which is not considered to be a part of the mainstream Mesorah that we based our learning upon.
So where was Rabbi Nosson based?
In Eretz Yisrael. Rabbeinu HaKadosh was in Eretz Yisrael. But what he drew from, he drew the Mishnayis, the Mishnayis that what he put together as the Mishnayis was a summary, pretty much, of the Medrash Halacha. The Medrash Halacha, we discussed this, the whole idea, the Medrash Halacha, there were two major schools of thought, the Medrash Halacha, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael. And the Rabbi Shmuel wasn't primarily in Chutz La'aretz. Rabbi Akiva was primarily in Eretz Yisrael, but not totally. But that's just the Mishnayos. So even the Mishnayos itself, which was a summary of the conclusions of the Medrash Halacha, had a lot of influence from Chutz La'aretz. But that was just the beginning. The beginning. Then came the Talmud Bavli, which extrapolated his Mishnayos, which developed, you know, the reasons for the, went into depth, into elaborating upon the Mishnayos. And the Bavli is not Ruba de Ruba, mostly Chutz La'aretz.
In the Esther Rabba version, it says, "Asarav kalatim shel Torah ba'olam tishah be'eretz Yisrael."
Oh, so it doesn't say Yerushalayim. Here it says Tisha B'Yerushalayim. Another very interesting difference. It's a major difference. You can't just ignore that. Here it says in Avos Rabbi Nosson Tisha B'Yerushalayim. Did it quote a pasuk? Obviously not, because here it's quoting the pasuk Ki Yitzion Teitzes Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. So Esther Rabbi could not take this pasuk, because this pasuk refers specifically to Yerushalayim, not to the entire Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so this, again, is a very critical, very fascinating insight, and it all touches upon the Iker, is should a person learn, or it's practical today, should a person go and study in Eretz Yisrael? A boy or a girl, they want to spend time learning. It used to be, that's what you used to go to Eretz Yisrael for, after high school, or before, or after college, you go time to learn. Today, it's not like Ruba de Ruba, people go to Eretz Yisrael for a year, it's for the experience. Different word. It's not necessarily to learn, it's the experience of Eretz Yisrael. And, okay, so to each his own, but that's a very big issue. Ki mitzion teitzei sarah, ein Torah kitoiras Eretz Yisrael. Classic Maamar Chazal is Pasuk in Bereishis, Uzehav Ha'oretz hahi toiv, shom ha'bedoilach ve'even ha'shoyam, And Chazal used that pasuk as a source that the gold is a reference to Torah. I'm not exactly sure why, but it was Zahav, the gold. There's nothing more valuable in the world than Torah, so I guess gold is the greatest, the most valuable commodity. So we compare the two to each other. The gold of the land is good. There's no better place to learn and to study Torah than in Eretz Yisrael. I mentioned to you maybe 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, about, I read recently the biography of Steinman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and he was presented with a question, if his children, people were asking him if their children are learning very well in Chutz La'aretz, should they even bother sending their children to Eretz Yisrael? Is there any advantage? So, because they're, you know, they're always dangerous. Zeh l'mazeh, Eretz Yisrael can also be, for not everyone is it such a safe place. There's not the proper supervision, you know, it's not always necessarily worth the risk. So he basically said to take into consideration the advantage, there's another advantage in Eretz Yisrael that you have today that you're not going to have in America mostly, is that unfortunately, it's very, very tragic, there are a lot of very poor people in Eretz Yisrael amongst the B'nai Torah. And yet, they're moiser nefesh to learn Torah in poverty. And when people come to Eretz Yisrael for a year to learn, it's impossible not to become in contact, not to be affected by witnessing people who live in abject poverty and are moiser nefesh to learn Torah with no complaints, with simcha. And that is something that's not all that common in America. And for a person to absorb that lesson is something that should be taken into consideration with all of the other issues of making an educated decision if should a person go study in Eretz Yisrael. It's definitely true. You go to Eretz Yisrael, it's a whole different world. It really is in the learning element, the learning aspect. There are a lot of different things in Eretz Yisrael. But as far as the world of learning, of devoting a life to learning Torah, there's no question about it. It's a different type of mesiras nefesh, which is something which is very interesting, and maybe that also has an element of why there is success. Ki mitzion teitzei soro dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. Okay, let's now go to the next pasuk. Pasuk Gimel. Pasuk of Shafan, and what is the role of the... Here we are going to define the role of the Melech HaMashiach. This seemingly refers to the Melech HaMashiach, the Shafat. He will judge Bein Amim Rabim between nations. V'yichiach lagoyim atzumim ad rochoik. He will rebuke mighty nations to the far distance. V'chitisu, this is a very classic pasuk, v'chitisu char voisehem li'itim. They will crush, they will break, they will demolish, smash, destroy. Many, many words. Take out a thesaurus and find all the different synonyms for the word, the kitisu. Whatever that means, it means to put an end to their weapons. The charvoy sehem, their weapons, to what? Now this is very curious. Li'itim. Itim is a plowshare. Okay, to a plowshare. So that has a connotation of recycling. Okay, it's you know, the modern day world, they're not going to just throw it in the garbage. I mean, maybe not. We have to read the Mefarshim very carefully how they translate these words. They will break. What exactly does it mean?
Well, the standard translation is to beat.
To beat, okay. Which means you make it not usable. So why do they have to make it not usable? Li'itim, which simply means a tool that is used to cultivate the earth. What exactly is the word li'itim? We'll have to see more precisely. Yeah. Next,
v'chanim. Can it be that in Tzvot lo ta'aseh, all the avirot will become Tzvot?
Okay, there's obviously ayin panim l'toira. There's the charvoy semi suggesting means the avirot and the itim, something which is positive, that the teshuva me'ava turns the avirot into zichuyos. Yes. Do you say that by a non-Jew? By a Jew, we definitely have a principle that the person does teshuva me'ahava, his averois nas as zuchuyos. Do we say the same principle by a non-Jew? A non-Jew who remains a non-Jew, he's observant of the sheva mitzvahs b'nei noyach, and he expresses sincere remorse over his sins. Do we apply the principle that his averois now become for him a merit? question. I don't know. It's quite a stretch to say that by a non-Jew. Here, we have to see what this means over here. What is the difference between a cherev and a chanis? Not so simple. Okay, a chanis, we have to see. We'll hold off one moment. A spear. What is the difference in warfare, in ancient warfare, between a sword and a spear? Distance. You want to say a spear is... Okay, short range. Defense versus offense. A sword, is a sword a tool that was used for defense? Or a sword is an offensive tool, but it's just you hold on to it. It's near. It's with close range. Okay, he took
a...
But hand-to-hand fighting, do you view hand-to-hand fighting as going on the offense or on the defense, or both? Or it's in a category by itself? I don't know. Let's see. So cherev is something that you hold in your hand, you fight with as you hold in your hand. And a chanis is a spear you throw. It's not an arrow. An arrow is long range, far. A chanis is only within a certain given area, right? You're only throwing a spear within a room, within a close area.
Shaul
threw against David. Again,
on
Yonatan, because he was angry. Yonatan defended David. Erev Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Chodesh, Mocha Chodesh. He defended David, and Shaul was furious. He threw the spear at his own son. He almost killed him.
There's more than one term for spear, though, right?
What's the other term?
Roma.
Oh, Vayikach Roimach b'yadav. Excellent. So what is Roimach? What's the difference? There's no, nothing is the same in the Torah. I don't know. Very good. Vayikach Roimach b'yadav. What's the difference? Okay, very good. I don't know. Let's see. Now, what's Lamaz Meirois? Plowshears. Now, plow, a pruning tool, which means that the item already is growing. It's growing too much. When it comes to the itim is a plowshare, which seems that there's nothing growing. You got to get the process moving. Go from 0 to 60 in 60 seconds. No, less than 60 seconds, 30 seconds. Right? A good car, how fast can you get the car up to 60 miles an hour? How many seconds?
6 to 8 seconds
from 0 miles an hour to 60 miles an hour in 6 to 8 seconds. The average car can do that?
The tires.
A Honda Accord, what? Depends on the tires? A Honda Accord can go from 0 to 60 miles an hour in six seconds? May I don't know, I never timed it. Okay, but that's when it comes to an itim. Lemaz Meiros is a pruning tool. A pruning tool is that it's growing too much. It's out of control. You have to go and stunt its growth because too much is also no good. Lo yisu goy el goy cherev. One nation will not even lift up. See, this is something which we appreciate. This is the, of course. This is it. They write, the United Nations, there are, is this possibly agreed on the rules of the United Nations? Yes, yes.
Well, you were talking about the Isaiah wall, right?
So, right, that's an issue. We have to really, when we finish this, we have to go back and compare the Radak
the
and the Malbum.
Plagiarism again.
Right, exactly. The plagiarism issue that we already discussed, but there's also, we have to discuss the nuances. There's a difference. They're not exactly the same. There are slight differences, and in the differences are volumes of interpretation. Why there are differences. It's not for nothing that they're both saying the same thing with different perspectives, so we'll leave that to the end. We finish it from another, let's get to the end of the section, and then we have to compare. They'll no longer study war. West Point will be shut down. What is West Point? It's the school to study the methods and the logic of war. Correct?
Yes.
Battles.
There's also an Army War College.
Army United States? An Army
War
College.
In DC.
Okay, so there's a school, you get a PhD in warfare. The PhD is obsolete to get a PhD. They'll no longer study war. There's a lot going on here in these psukim. Also, this is really, is the definition of the Cold War. What was the Cold War? It's not a matter of who can shoot better. It's a matter of who has the better weapons. The whole war, was there a precedent to this in world history, the Cold War, where basically two world powers are not trying to, they're not fighting, there's no fighting, but the war is who has better weapons.
I'm
sorry?
Is the argument. You have to have good weapons, but the personnel is very
the soul
important.
You have to have, yeah, so it really goes together.
I just recently watched a small film about the 73 war, Yom Kippur war.
Yeah.
The Israelis captured large equipment. The Egyptians didn't know how to use it. The Israelis, in a few hours,
they figured out how to use it.
They figured to use it. And they were very effective.
You can collect at this in this year.
I'm sorry, I didn't see him. I apologize to everybody. I apologize.
So we have, also, one you have to remember that in West Point they don't go near Israeli wars. That's what they say. I never saw anything official, but it's not part of the curriculum to study the wars of Israel, because those wars break all the rules, are totally beyond understanding, beyond logic. And it's the Yad Hashem. There is nature, there is teva, there is chokhmah in the art of battle. But the wars that the Jews have fought are beyond and above anything that makes any logical sense, both good and bad, both ways, which clearly indicate that by Klal Yisrael it's the Yad Hashem. But in the rest of the world, there is such a thing as the art of warfare, the art and understanding of how to conduct a battle, techniques, methods, weapons, psychology and strategy, and everything which goes along with it. There's a lot to learn and study. Now here is very, very fascinating. In ancient history, when we study Tanakh, when we look back in war, we're always learning about battles. It's always about battles. When you study ancient history, very rarely, if ever, do you ever come across what occurred in I guess when was it, the 60s, before my time, the 60s, the late 50s, maybe a little bit of the 70s, leading up until the fall of the Soviet Union, until whatever, the early 90s, whatever it was, of the Cold War. And what was the Cold War? No one shot one bullet. Between after World War II,
basically deterrence,
exactly, and basically spending money to have more nukes, more missiles, more technology, until the other country could not afford to keep up, until Russia could not afford to keep up with the United States, the spending of Reagan and whatever that was going on to build up an arsenal, enough weapons to destroy this world. Also part of the war. It's also an element of technology. What?
There were proxy wars.
What do you mean by proxy wars?
Other battles were going on directly between.
Indirectly, but that's right. That's true. Right. Someone else should do the dirty work. You should. It represents who you are. That's true. But the actual nation itself, besides the proxy wars. But the United States was building up a massive, massive arsenal that's beyond belief as a deterrent to the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union at the same time was also building up. And the competition between the fighter jets of the United States versus the fighter jets of Russia. Where in history or Tanakh do you have anything like this which took place in the 20th century, anywhere like this? That the whole war going on between two countries is just a war of a deterrent, like you said, to stake all of the taxpayer money, pretty much, and use the money for these purposes, to build up machines, but not to fight. This is v'lo yisa, not to lift up. It doesn't say over here to fight war. If we're discussing battles, then the battles will be to go to loichem a milchama. The pasuk should say, v'loy yilchamu goy el goy. one nation will not go to war with another nation. That's really what the pasuk should say. V'lo yilchamu goy. Whatever, I'm not good with this, you know that. El yilchamu goy. One nation will not go to war. It doesn't say that. It says v'lo yisa, not to lift up a weapon. We're not going to shoot the weapon. We're not going to activate the missile. We're not going to go. We're going to practice. But we're not going to. We're just going to lift up the weapon and have parades and show the world what we have and scare everyone. That's the war. That is the war. This is unprecedented. And yet, Micha was way ahead of his time. And Yeshaya as well. And they were able to see Moshe Mashiach, to see. And that's really what it is today in the world. I mean, the Cold War is not going any longer between the United States and the Soviet Union, but it is the same principle, really is expanded to the entire world, this idea. The more weapons you have, that basically means don't start up with us. Because I guess also part of the psychology is that the Churban is so great. It used to be you fight a war, so either you win or you lose, but there's still what to do when the war is over. Today, when the war is over, you're not going to exist, because if you're going to nuke the other, your competitor, you're finished, yeah?
But the thing is, defining peace as the absence of war, which is a very low-level definition of peace, if you're saying that a cold type war is what's being referred to here, it's not. It's more of a utopian.
Why is the Cold War any less?
That's Israel's philosophy.
You did have a Cold War.
We're not at war. We're at peace. They always say that. We're not at war.
But they're always under threat.
They're always at war. That's the problem. What do you mean they were not at war? They're on the defense every moment. They're afraid for their lives. You let down your.
Let's just say it's not a conventional.
So the U.S. is at war too.
We're living in a world where the way you fight a war is not by fighting. It's by having weapons. It's by having deterrence. That's the world we live in. This idea of having deterrence. Maybe it existed, but if when you study Tanakh, you don't get that impression. It's either you go to war, you fight, or you don't fight. The weapons was not the main thing. It wasn't a big deal. So you need weapons. Pyro was lucky at Sheish Meyois Rechev Bocher. What would happen if he did not have 600 chosen chariots? So you would have 600 Chevys. He would have some jalopies. He would go out and fight with. It wouldn't make a difference. It just happened to be had a mile. He had some good horses. It's not the ikur.
You don't think this is a vision of world peace?
This is exactly that. Is that the world peace referring to what will be the world peace? The world peace will be that you will not even have this. They will not. What do you mean it goes beyond that? Exactly.
Which is not the same as two armed camps trying to deter one another.
Exactly. That's what it's saying. They're not going to try to deter one another. V'lo yisu goyel goy cheref. He here is referring to Yemos HaMashiach. In Yemos HaMashiach, are there going to be real wars? Now, we don't know anything. We're just talking, thinking out loud. But when you read this pasuk, you would expect, if you're going to go say, oh, now we're talking about Yemos HaMashiach, there's Milchemes Gog U'Magog. So what's Milchemes Gog U'Magog? So we imagine that there are air sirens, and everyone's in a bunker, and there's fighting, and everyone's in the army, and everyone is wearing a uniform, and you're on the battlefield, and you're dodging a bullet. Every single living person is hoping that the next moment there's not going to be an explosion. That could very well be. Who knows? No one knows nothing. Or maybe what it means is that the definition of war in times of Yemos HaMashiach is not on the battlefield. The definition of war is, don't start up with me, because if you start up with me, I press a button and you don't no longer exist. You will no longer exist. I just press a button. So all you got to do is press a button. And the other country has its buttons. And the question is, who's going to press the button first? And who has an outer space enough technology to zap the missiles that are going to come, that are going to come first. So basically, no one is on the battlefield, and no one is actually fighting. And what is the war? The hatred is very intense. Let's not.
When is that?
Now, Hayoim, today, isn't that what is today?
Not at war with anybody.
They're not at war in the conventional sense. They're not at war in the conventional sense. They're not at war in conventional.
And everywhere you see, there are skirmishes, there are fights. You have India and Pakistan.
These are skirmishes.
Totally destroyed the other country. But as far as wars and fighting, you have it continuously. And Yilmadu means you're learning how to get a better weapon to destroy the other person. But it's being used in war today.
Oh, so you're saying even more deeper. You're saying lo yilmadu oyd mulcham means they're not going to study new technologies,
right,
for the purpose of creating new weapons.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's look at the basic idea. I think not everyone is in agreement over here in this idea. Let me try to bring. I see people disagree with what I'm trying to. Baruch Hashem, I'm happy. I'm suggesting over here something very simple. Micha over here is witnessing al pi ruach hakodesh our generation. In our generation, I agree with you, Rachman al-Islam, there are definitely battles out there all over the world. There are battles in America. There are people that are fighting for their lives on the battlefield. But that is, it's not highlighted. That is something which you just said, it's a skirmish. It's a small little. It's not considered to be the major effort of the way a country fights a battle. The way a major nation today fights a battle is by flexing its muscles. It's by having at a moment's notice an army that's ready to go out in the most sophisticated helicopters and jets, and has an arsenal of the most sophisticated high-tech weapons, but they don't actually use them. Okay, they had the F-35. Okay, everyone is aware.
Cyber war,
exactly. The F-35. Okay, does anyone know what the F-35 is? Okay, everybody, does anyone know what the F-35 is? It is the most advanced jet. It is the most advanced stealth jet in the world. Now, you know how long it's been around, the F-35? Over 20 years already it's been around. Israel first got it now. If they got it last year, 2 years ago, they got a shipment of two, three, now they have a few more. It took a few more. Last year, very recently, they actually used it. I don't know where it was, Syria, in Iran, they actually used it. And in the news, it hit the news, if you read the news, they wrote, this was the first time that this weapon was ever used in a real battle. Really? The F-35, and I was years ago, I used to play video games, simulators, okay? Simulators. So I had all the different simulators. You know, you download it. When the internet first came out, I used to get trials. The trials, I didn't pay one penny. And you get the F-16. And then the most sophisticated video game was the F-35. And this is a long time ago. So the F-35 has been around. If I'm playing here, I'm playing a simulation of an F-35 on my computer. Obviously, it's been around. And here, I'm reading an article. Oh, it's the first time Israel had the chutzpah. It was a nasty article, had the chutzpah to actually use it. America gave...
Except for Rabbi Levine.
They gave them a weapon, and they how dare this country actually use it? They actually use it for something real, to attack a target in an enemy country that was making trouble, that was a threat. And guess what? It's the first time that this weapon was ever used before. Isn't that amazing? What do you mean? In the time of Chazal, it's not, so why does it even exist? It's a deterrent. If you spend a crazy amount of money on this weapon, no one's going to start up with you. You won the battle. The battle has been won because you have a better weapon. You don't have to actually use the weapon. The way you fight, the way you win, is just by having the weapon, by lifting up the weapon to the world. The world should see, I have my weapon. That's what it says in the pasuk. V'lo yisah goy el goy cheref. They're not going to lift up the weapon. In ancient times, there's no such thing as lifting up the weapon. It's either you use the weapon or you don't use the weapon. And the sophistication of the weapon is irrelevant. So your sword is sharp. It's not sharp. It's a new model. It's an old model. Who cares? Who cares if the chariot has gold wheels or silver lined or gold? Who cares? If either you fight the battle or you don't fight the battle. The issue was going to war. He says the language here, which in ancient times didn't make any sense. What kind of, you want to talk about the end of war. So you should write, the end of war is, v'lo yilchamu goy el goy. One nation will no longer engage in battle with another nation. That is what we would expect Micha and Yeshaya to say when they're describing the Yemos HaMashiach, when Hashem will bring an end to hate and war and pain. They'll stop being battles. So why then did he describe battles with this very unique expression, v'lo yis'u goy el goy cheref? The answer is because he's witnessing Yemos HaMashiach in our day and age. And this was true for the Cold War, and it's really even more true today. Is that the way the world engages in winning wars is not so much by actually going to the battlefield and using the weapons, but it is by possessing the weapons and demonstrating to the world. Look, what's going on with North Korea? What does he keep on doing? Oh, he shoots a missile. He shot him. He did an experiment, and he shot a missile into here and over there. He's not shooting it in the United States. He's showing the world. What he's doing is, don't start up with me because I have this weapon and I'll do it to you. If you go and you mess with me, I'll go and I'll use it against you. What has he done? He has v'lo yisu goy el goy cheref. He's raising his weapons to show, look what I can do. Is he actually using it? He wouldn't dare use it because he knows that if he does use it, he's finished. But how is he fighting? How are they fighting with the United States? How are they fighting with Israel? They're displaying their weapons. They have parades. Do you find in the time of Chazal they had parades? They have parades to display their weapons? Was there such a thing in ancient times? A parade. And the parade is you go and you show off all your weapons. Was there ever such a thing? I don't know. Maybe there was. But it doesn't seem that was the ikkar. The ikkar was, we'll show you who we are because we'll actually destroy you. We'll actually go to war and we'll fight. They were macho. They were brave. They to be a gibor. How do you prove yourself? You come back with body parts of your enemies. That's the parade. The parade is, I have body parts of my enemies. That means I won the battle. Today, so when we're talking, when this is going to come to an end, it should say, there'll no longer be blood. There'll no longer be the casualties of war. No, he sees our generation. V'lo yis'u goy el goy cheref. He sees the war of the modern world, a war of deterrence, the Cold War. This is what he's got. Even that is going to come to an end. Even that, he predicts, will come to an end. V'lo yilmidun oid milchama, as you suggested. One goes say further, is that what it means over here to learn. It doesn't necessarily only mean West Point, to learn techniques of battle. It means even to invest in technology to create weapons of mass destruction. Okay, now you'll say, the technology ultimately is indeed used for good things. Dynamite, dynamite is used for a lot of good things. They make tunnels, construction, demolition. They use it for a lot of very good things. But so investing in a technology that can be destructive, it's true, but when your focus is not for war, your focus is for something positive, it's a different school. Okay, it's a different type of investment of resources. Here, today, there's no doubt about it that the Department of Defense is spending trillions of dollars, I don't know what the numbers are, to develop technology to destroy the world. Right? So they're sending people to school, they're sending people to learn and understand how to be destructive. The Manhattan Project. This was a school, the Manhattan Project. The people that were there, they sat the Chavrusa to Harava to figure out how to destroy the world. It's not going to be necessary to have a school to figure out the Koilel of Manhattan, to figure out how to destroy the world. They'll instead invest their resources how to fix the world, how to be misaki in the world.
The amount of time between World War I and World War II was only 20 years. Many people who fought in World War I
didn't recognize the weapons. Mm-hmm. They were different weapons, totally different world.
But it was only 20 years. People who fought in World War I fought in World War II. And they asked Churchill, I remember reading this, they asked him, how long do you think the peace, after the war, how long do you think the peace will last? So he said 50 years. And now it's about 70, 80 years. It's a tremendous chesed of Hashem. I mean, there are these wars, but this is a very, very great rachma. I always tell my sons, one of the greatest things about my sons is that they never had to go to the army. In my time, I mean, I didn't go, but I was being called up for the Vietnam War. And it's a very great chesed of Hashem that they've shown. It's a very big school for the whole world.
But Eretz Yisrael is very controversial. What you're saying in America is one thing, but in Eretz Yisrael, it's a very, very painful... part of reality is this divide. The divide of the army of, you know, it's a very painful thing. And whatever, what do you say?
I see here a process. You're talking about learning before. Kimitzion, etc. At the end, there is other learning that there's going to be.
Very good.
Now, before that, the Shafat ben Amin Rabim, many, many nations. What does it mean? United States over there and Russia over there. It's a far away. Ad rachok. And then elimination of weapon, stage number one. Number two, lo yisago what you were talking about. It's process.
It's a process. It's a process of history. There's very deep things. They put this passage from Yeshaya. It's from the same book on the United Nations. On it's etched into the stone of the United Nations. You gotta go and Google it.
Go
Google it. You'll see it etched into this. So do they even realize the depth of what it says? This is the times of Mashiach, what they're seeing. Okay, there's a lot of, obviously, everything is subject to interpretation. The words of Nevuah are very, very deep, with many, many layers. And let's just see what it says in the Mefarshim. Start with Pasuk Gimel on the Mitzvah of Stavet, and back on page 483, the Shofat. Ritzayin Eloimar. Who is the one that is the judge here? That's the big question here. Ritzayin Eloimar. V'chasher Yivakshu, Kain Yihyeh, and when the people who want, you always have to have a ratzon. If there is no desire, nothing is going to happen. When the nations of the world will want justice, then they will get. Kain Yihyeh. Ki ha-shoifet, who is the shoifet? V'hu melech ha-moshiach. Who yishpoit bein ho'amim harabim b'divrei rivoisam will judge them in their quarrels. V'hu yivorer ha'mishpat ligoyim atzumim hayoshvim mimerchok, that live at great distance. So notice here that the first mention of this pasuk of the Melech HaMashiach is not like what we think. It's for us. It's for the goyim. Everyone is always saying, if only Mashiach will come. I can't wait for Mashiach to come. All of my problems will be solved. Who says Mashiach is coming for us? For us, if you want to solve your problems, there are enough tools and resources available out there to solve your problems. Hashem gave us the Torah, and the Torah, there's enough in the Torah for us to come together and to figure out a solution to all of our problems. It is the Goyim, the Umay Sa'olam, who are clueless. They are the ones who really need Mashiach. If we, Klal Yisrael, had achdus, we all know that we can, what we could accomplish together is unreal. All the problems in society can really be solved if only we would all, the whole cloud issue would come together and work on solving the problems, whether it's the political problems of the army, the problems of Parnassa, the problems of Shidduchim. Everything can be solved if the whole Klal Yisrael would come together, work together as one big team, and work on it. We have the Torah, we have Siyata D'Shemaya, we have everything, we have everything. Unfortunately, that's Golus. We're not interested. That's really what it all comes down to. We don't want enough. But the Goyim, they're not capable. They don't have the tools. They literally do not have the tools available to them to solve their problems. They need Mashiach much, much more than we need Mashiach. And it's a pasuk. This is what it says. I'm finishing up now. I'm sorry. You can't come in the middle like this, and then in the middle just interject. It's not right. The goyim over here. The goyim here. They are the ones here who need. That's what it says here very clearly. Be'achris hayamim, Mashiach is coming for whom? For the goyim, not for us. Not for us. We don't need Mashiach. I mean, we need Mashiach, obviously. We want Mashiach for the base time, everything. But the daily living, just to get through the day, the Goyim need Mashiach much, much more than we need Mashiach. Now, he talks about over here, judgment between nations. Goyim Atzum. Okay, let's go to the next page. Next page, page 485, V'chitisu. So what does this word mean? V'chitisu. He writes here in the Mitzudos, Tzion first, Ki Si Sha. It means to crush. And on the Mitzudos David, the same person, he changes the word. I don't know why he changed it, but I guess he uses more of an explanation. It's a borrowed term. Yishmeru Kilei HaMelchama La'asos Mehem Kilei Avodas Adama. On page 45 in the Mitzudos David. Okay, so he writes over here, said that it does not say. Is not a literal translation of the Pasuk. The Pasuk says that if you read the Pasuk literally, it appears, there's something called an Itim. What is an Itim? Let's look over here in the Mitzvah Siyain. Shem Kli Chafira. It is a tool that is used to dig. It sounds like a shovel. Something which is used to soften the earth. V'chein Es Macha Rashtoi V'es Eso. It's used as a synonym to a Macharesha. A macharesha is a plow. A plow is used to soften the earth. What is an ace? It doesn't say. It's not really clear what it is. It's something that is similar to a plow. A plow does not appear to have a receptacle. A shovel is a receptacle. I insert the blade into the ground, and I'm able to lift a chunk of earth and move it to a different location. It happens to be that when you do that, you are softening the earth that you're lifting, and you're softening the surrounding area. So there's a softening of the earth, and in addition, you're able to transport earth from one location to another, and you've also created a cavity. It's an amazing thing. When you use a shovel, what we call a shovel, you're doing quite a bit. There's an element of softening of the earth. There's an element of transporting earth from one location to another for a purpose. And there's also the creation of a cavity. And there's also the creation of a mound. And all of that can be accomplished with the same tool. What is your primary purpose? The Gemara talks about this. A person digs a hole not because he wants the earth, because he wants to make it, he just wants it out of the way. He's potter. There has to be meleches machsheves. There are many different events that are happening when a person takes a shovel and inserts the blade into the ground, lifts up earth, and moves it to a different location. There's been a transport, there's been a cavity, there's been a mound, there's been a degree of softening. A plow does not have all of those elements. A plow does not have a receptacle to lift up a precise amount of earth. A plow is primarily used for one thing only, to soften the earth. That's the goal. It's an entirely different type of tool. What is an ace? I don't know. It appears to be... Can you please turn it off? What is an ace? An ace is obviously something very similar to a plow, but it's not clear exactly what it is. Okay, it's not clear what it is. Now, what does it say? If you take the pasuk and you read it very, very literally, you'll take the plow and you're going to crush it. You're going to polarize it into dust. How are you? What are you going to use? What tool are you going to use to take? The sword. You have a sword. A sword is a very dangerous weapon. A sword can kill. It's sharp. It's used to stab. It's used to bring death. It's an ugly weapon, and you're going to take it. You take the pasuk literally. It says v'chitisu. V'chitisu means to pulverize. You're not going to recognize it when you're finished. What? Oh, no, that's already a creative interpretation of the pasuk, but that's not the literal, that's the point I want to make. It's not the literal translation. The Mitzudas over here is going against his nature. He always likes to translate the psukim as literally as possible, and he's not doing that. If you were to take this pasuk and want to translate it literally, it says, you're going to take this thing called a sword, an ugly weapon, and you're going to pulverize it into dust. What's the tool you're going to use? Well, you'd expect a grinder. I don't know. There's a tool called an eight, le'itim. We're going to use, there are going to be many of them. And this is going to be the tool that will be used to pulverize this cheref into dust. Is that the correct tool that you would use? Not necessarily. There are probably better tools. There are better instruments out there in the world that are designed for this purpose of taking a sword and destroying it. I mean, if you put it into a fire, into a kiln, into some type of furnace, and you melt it down, then you just have nothing. But yeah?
He's saying
a transformation. That's not the literal translation of the pasuk. That's the point I want to make. Why is he doing that? Why is the Mitzudos Tov taking the liberty to tell us that at the end of the day, the cherev is going to be now a tool of production, a tool that is used for something productive? It's because obviously the word itim is not the correct instrument one would use to destroy a weapon. It's not the tool you would use. There are better objects, machines, and tools out there in the world that a person would select to take a weapon and turn it into dust. It should not exist. The fact that the pasuk selected this term called an itim to be the choice tool to destroy a weapon must be that you're not destroying the weapon. And in fact, you're taking the weapon and you're just transforming it into something productive. Isn't that what you were trying to say? And Michal, look at the words of the Mitzudos. Clay, avoidas adama.
Right.
But why did he say that interpretation?
When you say itim is not the it's the end result. It's not the
right. Thing. Exactly.
It's not the it's the v'chitetu that where it is.
It will no longer be called a cherev. This same piece of metal will now be called an eight. It will now be called an eight when the. But that's not the literal.
Oh,
exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. But that's not exactly. But that is not right. But that's not the literal translation of the pasuk. I'm in agreement with you. I'm just going through the steps.
No, I'm.
I am in agreement with you, but I just want to go through the steps. If you were to read the pasuk literally, and you would not have any commentary, you would read the chitisu. They will pulverize char voisehem Well, it does say the word le'itim, the lam. It's, I made a mistake. Le'itim. They'll pulverize their swords. Le'itim. So I made a mistake. It does because le'itim. Okay, so okay, I made a mistake then. The lamed. The lamed indicates two. It will be transformed into a tool called an eight. Look at the Mitzudos David. Yishperu kilei hamilchama lasos mehem kilei avoidas adama. Kilo yasu oid milchama. There is no longer war. V'lo yilmedu oisa. They will no longer study it. They will no longer be a yilmedu. Also, really, the real meaning of the word yilmedu, the similar meaning I'm going to see is at mitzvahs anoshim milimuda. What does the word milimuda mean in that context? Does not mean to study. It means hergel, what you are accustomed to. Limu does not always mean to think, to work, to exert yourself, to analyze, to become wise. It means second nature. Okay. It means what you are accustomed to. V'lo yilmedu oid milchama literally means, and we're going to see this, it means there will people it will not be second nature to man to fight. Today we live in a world where you're always on the defense. You're always on, someone is always trying to take advantage of you. On the alert. You always have to be on guard. Why is there an industry, a trillion-dollar industry of security in this world? Because at any given moment, if you let your guard down, you're finished. You let your guard down, if you do not lock the doors, then someone, this, every night there are people that go around, they open up every single doorknob. They just had an article about a 90-year-old guy who came from Florida to Manhattan, walks into the building, into an upscale building. Who would ever suspect a guy in his 80s, whatever it was, in his 80s, who would ever suspect a nice guy, such a fine person, 80 years old, and he goes into a building and he goes every single door, he turns the knob. And he gets lucky. Someone forgot to lock the door. He goes into the apartment, cleans out the apartment, $50,000, jewelry, cash, whatever he can find. Okay? So therefore, because that's what people do every single day, they go from door to door, and they open up the doors. Therefore, you are on alert. You have to lock the doors. It's second nature that before you, when you leave your house, you lock the door. You lock the door. V'lo yilmedu oid milchama. In the times of Mashiach, people will not live with that attitude of being on alert every single moment because someone wants to kill them, someone wants to rob them, and I have to defend myself, protect myself, or go on the offensive to make sure no one will do something like that. We will not be accustomed. It doesn't only mean to study. When we started this pasuk, I translated the pasuk to mean they're going to shut down West Point. There's not going to be a need to have a school to teach the methods, the art of war. That is one interpretation where you take the word limud to mean to study, to learn. Lilmod ulilamed, to learn and to teach. There's another translation of the word limud. Mitzvas anoshim milimuda hergel, what you are accustomed to. It will not be second nature to you to be on guard, to be afraid someone is trying to take advantage of you. You will never suspect a person would ever try to harm you. It'll be an entirely different world, and therefore there'll no longer be a need for weapons to protect ourselves or to go on the offense. And what will the weapons be used for? The weapons will be transformed into objects that can be productive, and in this case, to cultivate the earth. Okay,
well, that doesn't say you no yelamedu.
To teach.
Yilamedu is better.
Yil means to study. No one's going to teach you. You have to study.
Yilamedu
is to study. To study. People will no longer have a need to study the art of war. Or yilamedu means it means to be accustomed. Okay, that's the mitzvah study. Okay,
I know you want to say. Yilamedu is better.
No, yilamedu means to teach.
Yeah,
No. The primary goal is to learn, is to turn. Let's see the other mafarshim. Maybe you'll become clear. You're making a good point. We have to see the other mafarshim. Let's just a little bit more. We're almost finished. Pasuk Gimel in Rashi. Let's look at least Rashi for Shafat. Mishpat ze l'shoin toichachahu. Rashi says over here a new translation of the word of Shafat. We are ordinarily accustomed to judgment. There is a dispute. Two individuals, two nations come to court. There is a claim a crime has been committed. There's an injustice. And the judge has to decide who is right, who is wrong. Rashi says that's not what it means in this context. Mishpat means Mishpat Zel Lashon Toichachahu. Musar, discipline. Okay, and I'm looking out over here on the word. So he's saying that even when it comes to give Toichacha, he's saying a chiddush, even when it comes to giving Toichacha, there is no one's coming to court, no one has a disagreement, but the Melech HaMashiach will observe that you're not doing what's correct. The way you treat your neighbor, the way you deal with your neighbor is not correct. It's not derech eretz. Musar. Now that's very relevant for us on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, Rosh Hashanah is the day of Mishpat. Mehamelech ha Mishpat. So what does that mean? So the average person will tell you, well, it's the Yom Hadin. I've done things that are wrong, and there has to be it's a day of reckoning. Hashem is going to judge. Every single thing that I have done will be under scrutiny. Will be under scrutiny if it's a crime, if it was an act of kindness. Judgment. According to what Rashi just taught us, the word mishpat does not always mean judgment. There's no judgment. Everything you did is good. I'm not here to go and to no one's coming to complain. No one's coming here to complain against you. You've caused someone tsar, and we have to settle the books. No, Hashem is saying, I'm here to give you Musar. What you've done, it's fine, but you could have done better. You could have behaved in a more refined manner. There's no claim against you on Rosh Hashanah. Everything you've done in this year is fine. But you know, you could have accomplished a lot more. That's an entirely different league. That's a whole different form of the Yom Hadin. When you come before Hashem on Rosh Hashanah, and we say we change the Nusach of the Shemona Esrei, Melech Ohev Tzedakah Mishpat, to HaMelech HaMishpat, what does that mean exactly? The whole year round, Hashem love tzedek, what is correct, umishpat, and justice. And the Yimei Hadin, Hashem, enough of the mishpat, enough of judging you, of all the complaints, if you're a ganav, if you're not a ganav, you're a good person. But let's now get you to the next level. Let us raise you to a higher level of serving Hashem in a league. Let's get you out of the minors and get you into the majors, right? If someone is a ball player in the minor leagues, no one has any complaint against him. He's a good guy. He has a very good record. You know, his stats are pretty good. Why don't you play in the major leagues? Why are you only playing for some team you never heard of on Coney Island Avenue? Why don't you go play for the Dodgers? Because I'm not that caliber. I'm not that quality. I don't have what it takes to be in the major leagues. Why not? Why not? That is Rosh Hashanah. If you're a criminal and you've committed a crime, you stole a base, that's the whole year. The whole year, Melech Oyev Tzedakah Mishpat. If you're not nice to the umpire and you spit on him, That's the whole year. We're going to judge you for the chutzpah, how you spoke to the umpire, and the way you behaved in the minor leagues. But when it comes Rosh Hashanah, it's HaMelech HaMishpat. HaMelech HaMishpat is, why are you still in the minors? You should be a greater person. Be a greater person. Isn't that what Rashi is teaching us over here? When it says the word mishpat, it doesn't just mean judgment. It has another meaning. Musa, Toichocha, a demand to raise yourself to a higher level. And that is what he learns Rashi in this very novel way. It says the role of the Melech HaMashiach. The role of the Melech HaMashiach is not necessarily to go and to judge all the crimes. That also has to be taken care of. That's not something to be taken lightly, the crimes of one nation against another nation. But there's another tzvi, there's another role the Melech HaMashiach has, and that is to elevate, to lift up the Ummah Yisraelam to a higher level of what a human being is capable of being. And the model will be Klal Yisrael. V'shafat yitzeh, mishpat zeh l'shoim toichochohu. Not just mishpat. Okay, we'll stop over here, take a short break.